Now,
Helmets and Heels,
driven by Tire Outlet,
brought to you by Underwood Jewelers
and Renewal by Anderson on 1010XL.
Now your hosts,
Lauren Brooks, Donna Murphy,
and Taylor Dahl.
It is a Tuesday night, and it kind of feels like football season has begun. We don't have any games that matter just yet, but we have guys in pads on the football field. And ladies, I have to tell you, it feels so good. It feels so good to not just show up at practice and watch these guys, as they call it, in underwear, but to actually see them hit somebody. And speaking of hitting, we've brought a big hitter. That would be Mia O'Brien from First Coast News in
Yes. Is that what we're going to do? I was going to say, we're going to do that as entrance music until we change the open. Does that work?
We can do that.
It's sweet. Taylor,
listen,
Donna.
I pressed the button.
It's Taylor, Donna, Lauren, and boom, 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 boom.
There we go. Perfect. That's what we're going to do. You're going to retrack it with that. How does that sound? Perfect, RJ.
We want to take a practice run at this.
Okay. Who wants to be the announcer? Okay. All right. The bit is over. The bit is past.
That's it. That's all you get.
Happy to be here, though. Thanks for having me along for the ride for this wonderful 2021 season we have ahead, ladies.
That's right. It has been, for me, going out to practice, it has been an absolute blast. Getting to watch Trevor Lawrence, we talked about him last week. But now we're starting to see the other elements and the other key pieces and the schemes and everything like that, especially today with the pads for the first time, really start to kind of take effect. And I have been adamant that this team, Donna, is not winning more than 6 games. And now I'm getting sucked into a little bit more optimism every time I go out there. And I think, well, we might have a better starting left tackle than we've had in a long time if Walker Little overtakes Cam Robinson. And, well, we have a really good dual threat running back in duo in James Robinson and Travis Etienne. And these receivers are amazing. And the defensive line is actually better than maybe I thought it was going to be. And now I'm starting to think possibly double-digit wins.
You know,
am I crazy?
Well, here on 1010XL, we're very lucky and very blessed to have Leon Searcy on with XL Primetime.
Yes.
Because he's the one that I will take advice from when it comes to the offensive line, obviously, since he played the position.
Sure.
So when he has love for Walker Little and he says, that dude was actually quite impressive, I'm like, okay. So when we were all excited when they drafted him and we're like, are we going to be like way too hyped up on Walker Little? And it wasn't even training camp and it was just OTAs. We're like, look at how big the dude is. But we got to take a step back because it's just OTAs. But he was like, no, he's holding his own, man. He is making some plays. And I was like, okay, Leon, I'm stoked.
And to expand upon that, the opposite end of that offensive line that Leon was a part of here in Jacksonville, of course, featured one Tony Boselli. Mm-hmm. And now Boselli didn't tell me this. He told another reporter, Mark Long, this at practice, and then Mark relayed this information to me. So this is secondhand. However, I feel it still adds to this debate because what, according to Mark, Tony said is if you look at Walker, you can tell by looking at his legs and then looking at his torso and then looking at his shoulders, he is just a naturally large human being. Mm-hmm. When you look at Cam Robinson, even when you look at some of these other offensive linemen, I pulled up, and I understand I went to a Division III college, but I pulled up pictures of some of the offensive linemen at Ithaca College, which, hey, is the third winningest D3 program of all time. We're a big deal. just had to get that out there. But I pulled up some photos of them and these guys that within 3 years of stopping to play football, they immediately shrunk down. You also saw it with Joe Thomas of the mm-hmm. Cleveland Browns. I mean, within 2 years, the guy is literally half the size of what he was. And what Tony told Mark is that Walker Little is just a big dude, just like Tony. Tony said he's still close to 300 pounds and he carries it well. And that's what he anticipates, you know, 20, 30 years down the line, Walker Little to be doing. And that speaks to why he is such a natural at the position, because he is just a naturally big, gifted dude. I was very fortunate to cover Tristan Wirfs, the rookie tackle mm-hmm. for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers during my time in Iowa. Wow, we got an Ithaca and an Iowa reference in and it's 6:05. My goodness. But
all we need is Tom Brady.
Exactly.
Happy birthday, Tom Brady.
There we go. Tristan Wirfs, though, I mean, met him when he was 15 years old, just a massive human being.
Yeah.
And then naturally gifted athletically. And those are the dudes that will have an easier time transitioning to the league just because of the natural makeup they have.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to hear a guy like Walker Little and get excited about it. And as we're sitting there in local media and Jaguars media
hyping him up and saying, hey, this is good. That's awesome. But it's not, hasn't ended there. We've heard his name all over. We heard it from Jim Nagy at the media days. We've heard it from Ashlyn Sullivan last week was going on. And she was saying, like, they've been thinking it, but they're like painting this way to the Hall of Fame. And she's like, we've got to slow ourselves down a little bit. So it's not just like a few people at practice are like, wow, he's big. He looks good. Like it is, it's being talked about and that's important.
Well, and it's not just that he's big, you know, that can fade, you know, right? Yeah. After you go to a few practices, you kind of start to really get an idea of everybody's shape and size and whether or not they've slimmed down from last year, added some pounds like DJ Chark, which we talked about, Urban Meyer calling him out. But Walker Little has this fluid movement about him. And you're not supposed to be that big and be able to move like he does. And today we saw the battles of Kalavon Chaisson against Walker Little. And a couple times Walker Little got the best of him. But then I also watched, and by the way, this is how social media goes. You tweet out something negative about Kalavon Chaisson, really positive about Walker Little, but it's negative about
everyone's on the Chaisson stinks.
Right. Yes. Everyone thinks he's terrible. I immediately then tweet out, you know what? This time around in the second portion of individual drills, Kalavon Chaisson got the better of both Cam Robinson and Walker Little.
Yeah.
That tweet, very little interest.
Yeah.
Other tweet, a lot of interest. So it's just so interesting how people want to grasp on to, yes, this player's ruined and he's never going to be good. And also, by the way, CJ Henderson's terrible because he hasn't been out there. Like, just hold on, everybody. We haven't even made it to a preseason game, let alone a regular season game. Just take a chill pill.
Well, we're six practices in.
Right.
But before we transition to other areas of training camp we've seen so far, we'd be remiss if we didn't note, and this picture is circulating its way around the internet, and you should look for it. Kalavon Chaisson and Walker Little played against each other in high school.
Wow.
There are multiple photos of the two of them together on signing day, playing against each other in all-star games. And so the chippiness that we've seen the last two days between the two of them, I mean, I'm not saying it's just, you know, friendly fire, but we do need to note that as well. And I think that that's...
And I think that's fun. I think that it's good that we're seeing battles on each side, too. And I saw Mike DiRocco tweet earlier that Kalavon, obviously they're not physically sacking the quarterback right now, but he tweeted that Kalavon and Josh Allen technically both got sacks in this practice. And that's things you want to hear. Like, okay, that means that some things need to work on, but you want battles at this point because they're pushing each other.
And I asked Josh, and obviously Josh is arguably the biggest Kalavon Chaisson fan in the city of Jacksonville, but he said just in the little things that this kid has done to change his body during the offseason and the little things you see, whether it's his first step, whether it's the arsenal of moves that he now has in terms of pass rushing moves, he thinks the world of the guy. I think part of that is Josh kind of sees himself as the Calais to Kalavon, as Calais was to Josh in some regards. But at the same time, I mean, I trust Josh Allen's knowledge. He's been to a Pro Bowl and he's worked with enough pass. Von Miller thought high enough of the guy that he invited him to his pass rusher summit. So the guy can't stink that bad that enough other pass rushers think he's good enough. So, I mean, I don't know where this rhetoric is coming from. I mean, I've only had a few interactions with him. I think nothing, you know, I think he's a great guy. So, yeah.
Well, and Kalavon last night tweeted out, like, something along the lines of the media is supposed to report this kind of stuff, but, you know, I'm going to keep working or whatever, because so many people were saying negative things about him going up against Walker a little. But Josh Allen is a guy who, Donna, for me, I cannot go to practice and not see at least one time where he stands out. And it's usually multiple times. Today, watching him just in some of their early on drills where it was called the tackling session. By the way, the special teams drills are called special forces.
Oh.
I love that.
I also realized when we spoke with Anthony Schlegel, the strength and conditioning coach during minicamp, we forgot to ask him about what's the one when they're done doing stretching, it's called when they actually
flex?
Like, no. When they go up against each other with pads, the resistance. What's it called?
The difference.
Yes. The difference. There's literally a period that's called the difference.
Yeah. You'll hear Fernando, the guy on the microphone, he'll say the difference is next. The difference is
so
next.
And so that is the difference.
Yeah. So that's where you're doing little things to take it from just good technique and good fundamentals to the difference, as in what's really going to stand out and work the best possibly in a game, things like that. I mean, to our naked eye, we're not necessarily being able to see what they're evaluating them on during that drill, but you can just see that the coach is kind of yelling at them to finish. You know, that may be something, especially if it's defensive line. But yeah, for me, Josh Allen is a guy who I think he's going to have double-digit sacks based off, if he can stay healthy, based off of what I've seen already.
Well, and a lot of it, last year, we got to remember, it's almost like a lost year. It was such an off year for almost every player out there. You know, whether it be, you know, no offseason, you know, the workouts was weird. Everything was just off for everybody. A completely different coaching staff. Everything was different. And Josh Allen had such a great, you know, rookie season that we expected great things come the following year, mm-hmm. that, you know, everything just seemed down. So to have a great third year would be, you know, that's what we would expect. And to be right on track, get himself right back on track.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the guys around him play a big yes. role, too. And yes, he was hurt last year, but there was a big drop off.
Like, yeah,
we all know that defensively here last season. So our music theme tonight in honor of two things. One, Donna, you got to celebrate your husband's retirement from mm-hmm. the Navy 25 years
25
in.
25 years.
And how Ooh. Was the party?
It was great. Outdoors, you know, there's a pool so everybody can, you know.
Distance.
Distance. And we always, you know, my family likes to say, you know, just go dive in the pool and chlorine and de-COVID yourself. that's what we call it. You know, chlorine. Chlorine can cure a lot of things.
That's
so.
Right. Well, in honor of his 25 years in the military, and we thank him certainly for his service.
Yes.
And also in honor of my boyfriend Brian's 40th birthday on Thursday.
Oh, he's Ooh. A few days younger
he
than me.
He is. That's correct. Yes.
Or older than me.
So our music theme tonight, our favorite songs with a number in the title. A number in the title. So we will play those for you as we go along throughout the show. And then we also have a culture reporter joining us a little later, right, Taylor?
We do. We have Lara Overton, and she is the Colts team reporter and producer, so she's going to join us to talk, obviously, a whole lot going on in Indy right now, so we're going to get to that, which will be fun, too.
I saw some rumors on the dark web that Urban Meyer may be a professor of the dark arts, defense against the dark arts, for my Harry Potter fans out there, and there's a hex already being thrown
into the
AFC South. It hasn't hit Nashville yet,
yeah,
but
I was gonna say,
Indianapolis.
It's hit Houston, because Deshaun Watson already a little bit banged up, and
well, I think they did say
troubles.
Something about Julio not there or Julio
left practice abruptly.
You might be right. that is an interesting theory there. All right, we are Helmets and Heels driven by Tire Outlet, and we'll be back next with some music and a whole lot more Jaguars. You're listening to 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Laying next to you, I got a flight in the morning. Got me questioning what I think is important. I can't even
7 years and still going strong.
Helmets and Heels, driven by Tire Outlet.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
And Renewal by Anderson.
On 1010XL.
The ladies, with the start of our number theme for tonight, this is my song. This is Bozzy. It's called 315, like the time 315. But I love this song. It's just one that, like, I have to have full blast on in my car, though. Like, you can't turn it on. Like, you can't listen to this song at a low volume. It has to be, like, max volume.
I've never heard it before. I like
it. It's really good. All of Bozzy's stuff is really, really good. All, like, super catchy, kind of vibey, but nothing, like, super. It's everything about that speed, that tempo. But really good. So I want to, because we kind of, I didn't get to ask one of the questions I wanted to ask you two, Lauren and Mia, about camp. And we were talking a little bit last segment, but so one of the things we mentioned last week, Lauren, was, you know, we kind of said what position group we want to keep an eye on.
Right.
And all of us kind of in agreement, we had different ones, but we all said, you know, the corner, the defensive mm-hmm. backs are a big focus, just, you know, some of the things we want to see. And we heard Charlie Strong last week, I think it was, talk about, was it last week or was it yesterday?
Yesterday.
It's all the same.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Talk about how CJ Henderson is now, he's at meetings, but he has some catching up to do, he pretty much said. So have you guys noticed any other, when it comes to corners, like sticking out at all, or are we just waiting for CJ to be back?
I mean, and this
obviously
is,
Shaq.
This has been pretty highly, yeah, Shaq Griffin's your CB1, mm-hmm. if you may. And this has been pretty highly discussed at length here on 1010XL on the various programs, but Sidney Jones has looked very, very good. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's a former high draft pick of the Eagles that didn't pan out. When he was healthy last year for Jacksonville, it did look like he had the opportunity to revitalize his career. This is obviously a different defense. It looks like he's pretty much seamlessly picked it up. Right now, he is cornerback number two. If they are to line up tomorrow, He's cornerback two opposite Shaq Griffin. Trey Herndon, it appears, has really embraced that nickel corner role, and that's where he's going to be. I unfortunately had to leave practice midway through this morning, but from what I heard, so Lauren can probably give us more insight, it did sound like we heard Tyson Campbell's name called a little bit more this afternoon, which is encouraging.
Yes, he was able to make a few plays. That was the most I had noticed him. I hadn't even really noticed him other than seeing
33rd overall pick, folks.
Yep, and number 32 for everyone trying to memorize the roster. I would say everything Mia said is 100% accurate. I would say that C.J. Henderson definitely has an uphill battle to climb, mm-hmm. not just because he's been out and not able to practice and things like that, but this is my assumption. I think that a player who, this part is not my assumption, a player who's out for an extended period of time on the team, on whether it's the Jaguars or any other team you see across the league in the NFL, that means they're unvaccinated, right? Like, you're either vaccinated, and if you test positive, you, as long as you get negative tests right after, you can come back. I believe that anyone else that's out for an extended period of time, that's showing us that they're unvaccinated. That's what I have assumed.
Or they have it with some sort of severe symptoms.
Yes, or right, they are vaccinated.
And they continue
they have
to test
severe
positive.
Symptoms. Right, one of those things to be true. But so I think this is the part where this is my opinion. I think guys, if they are unvaccinated and they're missing time, I think coaches are going to, when they do come back, really run them to the ground. Mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit of anger and frustration on the coach's part. Because remember, if you're a coach and you're out there, you have to be vaccinated.
Yeah.
There's not any, and media has to be vaccinated. So I think they're looking at it, not in any way, shape, or form politically, but just looking at it like, I had to do this, so I kind of expect you to have to do this. And if you're not going to do this, then you really have to alienate and isolate yourself. Otherwise, you're going to miss time. And this is such a critical time for a new defensive scheme to be installed and for them not to be out there. And then obviously we saw also today Taven Bryan put on that COVID list. So
yeah,
we'll see if he's able to return a little bit quicker like Jared Wilson was. Again, I'm assuming that means that they're vaccinated when they return fast.
And it doesn't help that C.J. Henderson is by nature a loner of the type. I mean, that's just his natural persona. And, you know, we saw this with Jalen Ramsey. Like, you don't have to be Calais Campbell to be a leader and to be a starter and to be successful for the Jacksonville Jaguars. But by nature, he likes to isolate himself. I'm very curious what that then does with this new regime, new teammates.
With a guy like Shaq who wants you to be his best friend at
Correct.
This point.
Shaq and Rayshon Jenkins, they are very similar in that regard.
Yeah.
You go out to practice and they are bouncing around, dancing.
Love
Jihad
that.
Ward does a lot of dancing as well.
One thing I did want to note, and I tweeted this out if you guys want to check it out on Twitter, and we've seen it from the north end zone, or north sideline, excuse me, where Jaguars media is assembled. If you've noticed at practice, and for those fans that have been able to attend, the defensive backs and safeties do not take the practice field until they are all there. They will wait on the near sideline and stretch until everyone's there. Then they huddle up and then they take the field together, which I've never seen happen ever. And it's them. And I mean, yes, they practice further away, and it's not like the tight ends who practice right up against where players enter. But that just it speaks to the culture that Shaq Griffin and Rayshon Jenkins are trying to build. And I we didn't get to meet C.J. Henderson in person last year. So I've only had several interactions with him between his time at Florida and here. But he's not necessarily the warm and fuzzy hoorah guy that those two are.
Yeah, which a lot of people, especially fans at camp, love the Shaq and Rayshon personality. So it is going to be interesting. We're going to get in a little more camp because Ian Rappaport was on primetime yesterday and made some comments about DJ Chark and Urban Meyer. But I first want to say happy birthday to one of our friends. Ariana turned 10 over the weekend. And if you don't know who Ariana is, she's wonderful. Marcel Robinson's daughter.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday, Ariana.
We just wanted to give you a big old happy birthday.
We got to get the biker gang back together. I was looking back through the old Instagrams of her and Marcel. Mm-hmm. They were bicycling this time last year. We got to get the bicycle gang back together.
Get the bike gang. All right, so RJ, if you'll play the sound in just a second, it was all over Twitter yesterday. If you logged onto Twitter and followed anything Jaguars, you saw pictures of Urban Meyer and DJ Chark kind of working out on their own over to the side, and there was even videos from it. We heard a lot of people talking about it. Rick Ballew had some comments on it. So Ian Rappaport joined XL Primetime yesterday, and he made a comment about what he observed from seeing that situation at camp.
You know, before the practice with DJ Chark and Urban Meyer working on receiver drills. And that was interesting, too. I mean, he's a guy, he's really talented player, really talented. They want him on board. They want to help him learn what this coach is trying, this coach's staff is trying to instill. What better way than one-on-one work with Urban Meyer? So that kind of stood out to me a little bit.
So my question, how do you take this? Do you take this extra effort as DJ Chark is possibly behind, or do you take this as Urban sees something possibly and just wants to put a little more because he sees something DJ Chark can really be?
Yeah, I would say based off of the video, and I know we all watched it, it looks like he's really trying to make DJ Chark more physical.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that happen here a few years ago when Allen Robinson, his first year's rookie year, was sensational, and then his second year had a lot of issues getting off press coverage. I think when Urban's gone back and watched the film of DJ Chark, that's probably a lot of what he's seen, which is not able to quite get that separation, and that's why he really wants to make sure that he is super physical. That's why I think he had him gain that extra weight and muscle, because he wants to make sure that DJ is able to get through that, you know, bump in coverage at the line. Mm-hmm. And so I love to see this. This means that, yes, Urban sees something in DJ.
Yeah.
DJ, obviously, of course, willing to put in that extra work. And by the way, I got to see his wife and little baby daughter today
at
practice. So freaking cute. But yeah, to me, it's really saying that I want you, Urban saying to DJ, I want you to be special. Mm-hmm. I still think Marvin Jones is going to lead the team in receiving this year. That's just my gut feeling based off of not just practice, but also what I thought going into the season.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think DJ Chark is going to have a really good year. And that's also because you've got Marvin Jones Jr. and Laviska Shenault looks incredible at practice.
And Trevor Lawrence throwing the ball.
And right, and a really good quarterback. And so you've got this really good mix of guys. So they've got a lot of weapons with, of course, ETN in the mix as well. And so I think DJ Chark's going to have a really good season. And I love to see that extra work. If I was a player, I feel like that's who I would be, that person who isn't necessarily the most talented, but is always willing to put in that extra to learn to be the best.
Well, and knowing that he can sit there and he's already called him out at the beginning. This was at the very beginning of his press conference, you know,
OTAs,
months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he called Chark out and Chark responded saying, I can take that. And I love that he did that. And I'm willing to put in the work. And here he is coaching him one-on-one. And he is willing to put in that extra work. And this is proof. And that's what they're going to make it. And they're going to make sure that they're going to get this right. And yeah, we all agree that Marv is going to be the number one guy because that's what he has proven he can be, even though there was nothing in Detroit, you know, and Matthew Stafford, even though the Rams gave up everything for this guy, still Marv was still the number one guy. But yeah, DJ Chark is going to be this guy. He's going to be the number two and he's going to put in this extra work. But he's been outspoken about mental health as well. So he's already mentally prepared to take this extra work upon himself as well.
Yeah. And Mia, do you think that maybe when it comes to him being very vocal about the mental health and right away Urban kind of saying, hey, these are the things you fix. Do you think that Urban has kind of just said, hey, this is the kind of relationship, coaching, player relationship that DJ Chark needs?
Yes. I want to preface this by saying I have never lined up with pads and a helmet on, but I do recall a certain Jimmy Smith calling into this radio station a few months ago and saying that Keenan McCardell was not able to coach DJ Chark the way he fully wanted to. And nothing against the previous regime, but I think part of why Urban is spending so much time with DJ in particular, and I've said this at length, Laviska Shenault is a freak athlete. Like, he naturally is just, I mean, he's going to run routes accurately. He is going to catch the ball. It just is what it is. Marvin Jones has had extensive coaching to the point where he runs such crisp routes because he is 31 years old and also because he's already worked in this offense before. So if DJ Chark is the third piece to that three-headed monster, that's the weak link right now. And I think Urban Meyer recognizes it and wants to make sure that it isn't the weakest link. And maybe that's a rude awakening for some that maybe DJ Chark wasn't this, you know, wide receiver number one, but he clearly is embracing it. He said to us over the weekend that he doesn't want, or last week, excuse me, that he doesn't want to talk contract extension right now. He's very blessed to be where he is. And that is also the right approach because this is a new regime and he has to own it and prove it before he can talk about that.
And today, Hayes Carline caught up with Daryl Bevel, the offensive coordinator, and had a one-on-one interview with him, which was fantastic. And Hayes always does great one-on-one interviews. And Daryl Bevel, when asked by Hayes, who's showing up to you in this offense so far, even though it's early on? And he immediately said, Marvin Jones Jr. and Visca looks great. And then he added, and DJ Chark is starting to come on too. That to me kind of spoke volumes. Not because DJ Chark's not working at it.
Yeah.
Not because he's not trying to do everything in his power to learn the entire offense and all that. It's just, it's not coming maybe as naturally for him.
Mm-hmm.
Like Mia said, maybe because he suffered from lack of quarterback play and coaching in the past. And so I still think, though, that he's got so much talent. He's going to be a guy that is a really big weapon that Trevor Lawrence can find, you know, not just big downfield plays, but all over the place.
Well, and I think we've seen it here with DJ. We've seen what DJ can do. So imagine that with a quarterback, with the coaching that he needs and all of the surrounding pieces. And for that to be your third receiver, that's big.
And it is important to note that Urban Meyer, after his graduate assistant job, his first job out of college, was a wide receivers coach for almost a decade.
Mm.
So by nature, that is the position. As much as I know he's a special teams guy, mm-hmm. I know obviously he's an offensive guru, if you may. But yeah, no, that this is a position that he has coached extensively and has experience coaching.
You got that right. By the way, a little later in the show, we have a new sponsor that's come on board, and we're going to talk all about Spencer's Jerkin' Jerky.
Ooh.
We get to get free jerky, y'all. How exciting is that?
I love jerky, so I'm here for it. All right, well, up next, we're going to dive a little deeper into the AFC South and talk to the Colts team reporter, Lara Overton. That's next on Helmets and Heels, driven by Tire Outlet. I spent all my money
drinking on my own, yeah. Helmets and Heels, because hats and shoes just doesn't have the same ring.
Driven by Tire Outlet.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
And Renewal by Anderson.
On 1010 XL. But I've let one too many come
take me home. Lauren's looking at me going, wait, this is yours? Oh, because of Pink. That's right. Yes.
Because it's technically country.
Yes. Yes,
I love this song. Are you kidding me?
Keith Urban is in there, but it's technically Pink.
Keith
as
Urban
well.
Is hands down the best act I've ever seen live. Side tangent. Had to get that out there for the fans.
That's okay.
Whether you like country music or not, because my college roommate, shout out Emily LaPierre, she hates country music. Took her to a Keith Urban concert, and she went, wow, country
I
might not be
this.
This might not be so bad after all.
Well, you know, Bublé is live in concert next Friday, which I will be at. So. You haven't seen all the concerts.
No, I have not seen Bublé. That's true. I haven't seen the voice of an angel, so I need to.
One too many. That was my song choice. We're doing songs with numbers tonight. But joining us right now, we have a team reporter for the Indianapolis Colts. That would be Lara Overton. Lara, how are you?
Hey, so great to join you guys. I'm doing great. Thanks. I appreciate you having me on. It certainly has been no shortage of activity and news here out of Indianapolis.
No, it has not. We appreciate you taking some time to join us. I don't know really what to get to first, but we might as well start with Carson Wentz. So he has decided to go for surgery, 5 to 12 weeks. It seems like that's what the time frame is. What are you guys expecting? It looks like Jacob Eason is going to be your go-to QB right now.
For right now, Jacob has been getting all of those first team reps, and just like you would expect, I mean, the guy is essentially a rookie. He spent last year sitting behind Phillip Rivers and Jacoby Brissett, so he has some of those early struggles. You got to keep in mind, he's going up against one of the best defenses in the league, of course, as you have this Colts defense that was so productive last season. So they're certainly putting the pressure on him. They're not taking it easy on him whatsoever, but this is a great opportunity for Jacob Eason to really be immersed into the starting role at this point. When he was last season, his rookie year, you know, sitting behind Phillip and Jacoby, you had no preseason for him to test himself in that scenario. He had some opportunities certainly in training camp, but then when you got in the regular season, you had Phillip taking all the first team reps. Jacoby was running scout team. So it wasn't until later in the season that Jacob Eason had an opportunity, once Phillip had that toe injury and was limiting his practice time during the week, that he finally had an opportunity to show what he could bring into the room. So this is finally an opportunity, the one that he's been waiting for over a year, since the Colts drafted him in the fourth round. And the Colts drafted him in the fourth round because they saw things that they really liked and felt that they could develop. And what we know is that if there is a guy who can bring out the potential in a quarterback, Frank Reich is that guy. Look what he did with Nick Foles when they were together in Philadelphia. I mean, Jacoby Brissett, even with the limitations that Jacoby had in his skill set, you know, Jacoby was a good quarterback, was a productive quarterback, had the Colts in a good position prior to getting injured in 19. Coach Reich resurrected the career of Phillip Rivers after, you know, he struggled in his final year with the Chargers. So this is really going to be a test, and not only of how Jacob Eason can embrace an opportunity, but how well Frank Reich can scheme an offense around the strength of a quarterback and also around maybe the limitation of a quarterback. You have some other assets, of course, to work with. The offensive line, which I'm sure we'll get into that as well, because that has some injury issues already. But you do have this run game as well. And one of the things that we have seen in training camp is a great rapport between the 2020 rookies, Jacob Eason and Michael Pittman Jr. So if we can start to see a ripple effect where that great rapport he has with Pittman and the chemistry and continuity that they have in the receiving game, perhaps that can carry over to some of your guys. T.Y. Hilton, Zach Pascal has had some great reps also with Jacob Eason, but the rest of the guys who you need to get engaged in there.
And part of it as well is that Carson Wentz's injury timeline is 5 to 12 weeks. I mean, that is quite the range. Yeah. I mean, if it's 5 weeks, okay, we can live. We can figure this out for a couple weeks. If it's 12 weeks, this entire playbook maybe has to shift, like you mentioned, towards Jacob Eason and his strengths. So with all that said and done, gun to your head, do the Colts trade for another quarterback at some point in the next 5 to 12 weeks?
Right now, I don't see it happening because you have a lot invested already in the guys that you have. You obviously made the trade already for Carson. You just locked up Braden Smith into, you know, a big contract on that offensive line. You know that money is looming when with having to pay, you know, all-pro linebacker Darius Leonard as well. So you are starting to look at where you can expend some things, and I don't know how much more you're really able to give up, knowing that you've already potentially lost a first-round pick next year with this trade of Jacob Eason, or with this trade of Carson Wentz, with the compensatory situation with Philadelphia. So I don't know how much more wiggle room you can have given the investments and the contracts and the trades and, you know, all of those different things that you've already made. I also think that you have, again, you have the fourth-round pick that you invested in Jacob Eason. You have a sixth-round pick in Sam Ehlinger. I think Sam Ehlinger has a very high ceiling. It's going to be interesting to see if he can translate a lot of that success he had at the college level at Texas, how he works within an NFL pro system. They already signed Brett Hundley last week. And what was interesting, when we talked to Brett Hundley on Sunday or on Saturday, we learned that that was a move that was days coming prior to the Carson Wentz injury. So the Colts were already working on bringing some experience, some veteran presence into that backup quarterback rotation, even prior to Carson Wentz going down. So I know everyone is throwing the darts at Nick Foles and that scenario and all of that. My thing is, you've got guys who you are confident in. I don't think Nick Foles gives you a whole lot more than what you already have, given the quarterbacks that you have in this room. And I also think, too, that, I mean, you know, here's Jacob Eason, who spent a year in that situation awaiting an opportunity. I feel like this would kind of crush his confidence. It would basically indicate that you don't have a whole lot of confidence on when Carson is going to be back and what type of shape he's going to be in when he comes back. So I think that the Colts will remain steadfast and locked in with the guys that they have. A couple of things that we learned about Carson's injury: it was successful, the surgery that he had Monday afternoon here in Indianapolis. What they'll do is they'll give him 2 weeks to rest, and then they'll have 2 weeks where they'll kind of get into the rehab process and getting a gauge on how strong that foot is feeling and where his pain level is, the swelling, all of those other factors. So in about 4 weeks, we'll have a realistic timetable on his return.
Now, Lara, Taylor Dahl here. So another one that you kind of mentioned briefly was that offensive line. So unfortunately, a guy like Quentin Nelson is who all of us want protecting our quarterback. It's a big blow. Again, another one that's 5 to 12 weeks, so it's kind of a big span. And then obviously with Eric Fisher also, I'm not quite sure of the timeline of that one. But looking at those two injuries, what is this next month or two looking like for the offensive line for the Colts?
You know what? I'm going to add a third one onto that as well.
No!
Yeah, Ryan Kelly.
Ryan Kelly hyperextended his elbow. No. So you're starting center. Also, I think Ryan's injury is more of like they're thinking a 2-week time span. So you're looking at hopefully he kind of gets in the mix by that second preseason game potentially is when you're eyeing working him into the rotation a little bit. Doesn't seem nearly, you know, it's not a injury that's going to require a procedure. It's a hyperextension of the elbow. So nothing like what Quentin is going through at this point. Guys, this is just wild. I mean, Quentin Nelson had a foot injury very similar to Carson's, 2 days after Carson's injury. Quentin's surgery was today. Apparently the same doctor. I mean, I don't really know what's going on right now, but like, I don't want these guys walking anymore. Like, we're going to start carrying them or put them in carts.
Put them in bubble wrap.
Yeah, absolutely. So with Quentin, kind of a similar timetable. You have those first 2 weeks to just let him rest, heal up, and then 2 more weeks before you test. And here's a guy, if there's a guy who heals quick and can play through just about anything, it's probably going to be Quentin Nelson. So I would think that it's probably on the shorter side of that to get him back. I'd say the season opener is still very much in play. You mentioned Eric Fisher. I've been so impressed in what we've seen these last few days from Eric Fisher. On Saturday, he certainly, you know, was not out in practice, but he was off the side of the practice field running some pretty intense drills, doing some cutting, some sprinting, looking like that Achilles is really strong and he feels very confident in it. So, and that's crazy because that was an injury that happened AFC Championship game. You're talking end of January. We're at the very beginning of August, end of July, when he's out there running and looking like that he is in great form at this point. So I think for Eric Fisher, you know, you're hoping again that it is sometime in September potentially that you could get him back. The Colts have not put a time frame on it. This is just what I've observed, having the opportunity to kind of watch him run around and work his way in practice. I think he looks really strong. No setbacks for him, the timetable for his return. So what you're really hoping for, guys, we know the gauntlet that this Colts schedule looks like through the first 5 games, toughest schedule in the league through those first 5 games of the 2021 season. So I think what you do is you're really hopeful that you're at full strength when you kind of close out that first quarter of the season. That week 4, week 5 point is where you're really starting to get all these pieces together. In the meantime, you're really hoping that you can rely on certainly your run game and those guys that you have Marlon Mack back. We saw what happened to him in Jacksonville last year. Of course, he's coming off the Achilles injury. And then you of course have this fantastic defense that has just been absolutely lights out in training camp so far. But I do think that, you know, the confidence is very high for the Colts in what they have. Coach Reich, who is just one of the most resiliently positive people, was just like, hey, you know, this is just what happens. You're going to have adversity. Ours is coming toward us early. We're going to be galvanized through this. We're going to be tougher because of it. It's, you know, he likes to say next man up, the old coach speak. And I do think he truly, that's not just, you know, surface conversation. He really believes in that. And they will be sure. You still have, you know, these 5 weeks or so to develop guys you have in this locker room to be the guys who are going to toe the line for you, who are going to step on the field week 1, give you a chance to win.
Lara Overton with us, Colts team reporter. Lara, we talked to Matt Taylor on the Frangie show earlier this week, and he told us, you know, how good Carson Wentz had looked at practice. I'm sure you've seen the same thing. What was the mood like once everyone realized they're going to be without him for quite some time?
Well, it was really strange because the day that he got hurt, he walked over to the edge of the field where they do media, and he did an interview with Stacey Dales and NFL Network, walked off the field, and I'm very close with Stacey. She, you know, comes to Indy a lot from Chicago and, you know, kind of covering the Midwest as she does. And I asked her, I said, I didn't even notice he was limping. She said he wasn't. I didn't notice anything at all. So it really was, I think for the most part, it was a little jarring because just people, it wasn't like he went down on the field, you know, like in those, it wasn't a clear severity of an injury that you would expect to require a surgery. So I think at first there was a bit of shock, but I think what this Colts fan base has learned is that you really got to trust Frank Reich. And we have seen that time and time again when, you know, you think about Andrew Luck coming off the injury situation, Frank got him into the position he did in 2018, you know, Jacoby getting him into the position that he did prior to the injury that he had last year with Phillip. There were so many people. I mean, this time last year, people within the fan base were like, you know, old man Rivers, what are we doing? This guy, I can't believe it. Because he kind of was, for a long time, the guy Colts fans loved to hate, because he would dice you up when he was in San Diego and L.A. There were some epic battles. So I think everyone was really prepared for this to not work and wanting to not like Phillip Rivers. And then he gave you an outstanding season that put you into a playoff situation. So I think what we've learned going into year four with Frank Reich is you never count anything out. This is the guy who has the ability to always put your team in a great situation. That's why he's your head coach. And that's why Chris Ballard, you know, is certainly one of the highest regarded GMs in the league, because he always finds a way to put the pieces in place to give your team a chance.
Lara, before we let you go, I want to check in and tell us how their number one pick was this year. Kwitupe, everybody was rooting for this guy in the draft, you know, from his story of his family escaping Liberia to living in welfare in Rhode Island to becoming a stud in Michigan. If a team was going to draft him, every fan base was going to back him up. So how has he been doing in training camp?
He has not only been so well received. I mean, from the day he walked into the building, even before he got on the practice field, people were so excited because, as you mentioned, the incredible story. This fan base was so ready to embrace him because he brings in that mentality, that like hardworking, hard-nosed, want to, you know, get your fist in the dirt type of guy. And so that was first and foremost. Absolutely. You couldn't find, a better story in this year's draft. And then he has been outstanding in camp. I talked to him after the first day of practice, and he said the biggest difference, of course, was the speed. That's what we hear from so many first-year guys, is exactly the speed of the game going from college to the NFL. But you guys, I mean, he didn't look like a rookie very long. He has made some outstanding plays. He had a, you know, fumble recovery for a score in one practice. He has given this offensive line everything that they can handle. He is looking every bit like the guy who they hoped he would be coming out of Michigan, who they used a first-round pick on. He is incredible. And you can just start to see, too, his confidence is just soaring. He is in an incredible defensive line room. You have DeForest Buckner, who is just an absolute monster on the line. Grover Stewart has been incredible in terms of his development and the impact that he's made on this defense. Tyquan Lewis is another guy who he's surrounded himself, who has, you know, been awesome. Then Danagu. This whole room entirely is so great. Brian Baker leads that unit. This is his second year with that defensive line group. So everyone in that kind of unit is really supporting Kwity in terms of putting him in this position where he can flex and be that very fast, you know, quarterback rushing, quarterback pressuring type of presence on the edge. You needed an edge rusher. You lost, of course, Denico Autry, who went within the division. Of course, he went to Tennessee. So you guys are going to have to see him down there in Jacksonville. We're going to have to see him. And you were looking for certainly a replacement because the Colts certainly lost a ton of sacks, not only with losing Denico Autry in free agency, but also with Justin Houston, who departed in free agency, just recently signed with the Baltimore Ravens. So the Colts feel really strongly about where Kwitupe is right now.
Well, Lara, we appreciate you taking time for us, and I would wish you good luck, but you are our rivals. But I will tell you good luck on September 26th because we hate Tennessee. So go ahead and you can take care of the Titans if you want.
We can all unite on that front, right?
Yes,
that's right.
We can take care. All the weekends that we play play the Texans or we play the Titans, same for you guys. And then look forward to hopefully getting down there to Jacksonville after not being able to travel in the 2020 season. Hopefully we're back to that in 2021.
Sounds good, Lara. Thank you so much.
She's fantastic. We would love to host her if she comes down to Jacksonville this season.
I would love to hear, which obviously we can't talk to her for the whole show, but I'd really love to hear the perspective in the Colts organization of their view on Jacksonville, because we've heard a lot of the national media, but we haven't really like super dug into like the division rival like perspective. So I think I wanted to get there, but I knew that probably would have been a whole nother segment.
My guess is that they view the Colts before the Carson Wentz injury viewed themselves as going for the division title this year against the Titans. And then Jacksonville and Houston's well below them. That would be my guess.
I just can't imagine them going into the season with Jacob Eason. They go Seattle. They start off with Seattle, and the Rams.
Yeah, their first five games are ridiculous.
I get her point of if you were to trade for someone, you're basically telling Jacob Eason you're never going to get your shot.
Yeah. Right.
But no offense, he's a fourth-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. Like, he's drafted in the fourth round to become a backup. Mm-hmm. Like, fourth, fifth, sixth-round picks, that's what they're drafted to
do. We've seen magic happen before, but
Minshew magic, to be precise. and there are still those that would argue that as a sixth-round draft pick, why are you expecting more than...
And that's a question we can pose in the next... segment,
hey, yo.
If you would like.
Hey, yo. That's a heck of a transition right there and a tease for our audience.
So more coming up next on Helmets and Heels driven by Tire Outlet.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. Back again. Luda. Feel this. This gets meaner and meaner each time, baby.
Stilettos and Sabermetrics.
Helmets and Heels driven by Tire Outlet.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
And Renewal by Anderson.
On 1010 XL.
I actually know this one.
I was like, I'm not going to lie. I'm like trying. I'm like, whose song is this?
Yeah, we're all looking at each other.
No, I was trying to point to RJ. But y'all
this is RJ's song?
Or
and then
no,
I was like,
I was pointing to RJ.
DJ RJ. DJ RJ's
RJ
song.
What's that song, man?
Number one spot.
Yeah.
Number one what?
Number one stunner.
Spot. Uh-oh. Not She's stunner. A- what? Lauren, take a break. Take a break.
There is a song, Number One Stunna.
There is, but it's not by Ludacris.
No, that's Luda. Number One Stunna is by Big Timers. That's right. But either way, I like both of those songs that we're referring to with number one in the title, and hopefully we have the number one quarterback of all time on our team.
Forever.
Forever and ever.
Our precious jewel.
Yes, that's what I referred to him last week, Mia.
As my precious?
No, our prize jewel. Not precious jewel. Our prize jewel.
Okay, prize jewel.
We cannot remember the words. It was like, whatever.
Well, he did have a bounce back. He had a bounce back day today after arguably his most challenging practice of the six that we've had so far here in Duval County. So he's back to being the crown jewel.
You mean the 904?
The 904.
I laugh every time.
I mean,
I
feel like as much as I'm now joining you guys full time, I feel like I'm still morally obligated to say the First Coast. If you know if you know where my other place of employment is. Mm-hmm. But yes, the 904.
You can say First Coast News.
Yes. Yes.
Every time Urban talks, the 904, the 90. I'm like, how you have to. I feel like it's a drinking game every time he does a press conference. Yeah. How many times
well,
he
deep
says
deep dive
like,
would also be a drinking
deep
game.
Deep dive, yes.
Because deep dive is a constant.
That could be a fun one.
Well,
too.
We got listeners out here saying that
good for drinking.
We got listeners out here saying over under on Mia saying to follow up on that or to expand on that. So I guess that's my
what about Ithaca College
or Ithaca College or Iowa? I mean, you could also throw those in. I mean, listen, guys, 6 to 8.
We add actual wine to our nights and then
right.
Take us
exactly.
By the way, I just realized this earlier, Donna. We heard the 7 years and counting promo because Helmets and Heels has been around.
Now.
Well, we started right? August of 2014, uh-huh. So technically this month means we've been on for 7 years, mm-hmm. But I guess
hitting
we're starting
eighth
into
year.
Our eighth year, right. But we've been on for 7 years now. How old were the two of you when we started this show, by
in
the way, 2014? Mia and Taylor? Yeah, how
I
old were
you? I turned
y'all?
14 in 2014.
In 2014?
What?
Oh, 24.
Like,
I always do that.
Wait a minute.
I turned 24. So I was born in 90, so it's always easy to remember for me because it's always like that. I turn whatever age
it is. I was like, we're
not
that old. Yeah. Okay.
Yes,
you turned
24.
And Mia...
In 2014, I was a college, I was a college junior going into my senior year, so I was recently turned 21.
Oh yeah, see, mine gosh. Actually, the next summer, I started at 1010.
Okay.
So it's not as a big of a wow.
Well, neither of you were teenagers,
I wasn't
so just like to reiterate.
Yeah, no, we were in our 20s. We were in our 20s.
Yes, you were in your early 20s, and Donna and I were not. We were in our early 30s when the show started, right?
What is today? Today is
7 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So I am 21 days away from being 40.
That's right. So you would have been 33 and I would have been, I forgot how old I am. I'm now 39.
Math.
So I know. I would have been 32. Yeah, early 30s. I was right in the first place. All right, RJ, take it away with who said it.
What did you say?
Nothing.
What did you say?
What did he say?
What did she say?
We talking about practice.
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get. Don't you ever talk about me.
What you say? That you only meant well. Because you did. What you say?
fired. I really like that.
I do too.
Such a great open.
We've had to skip it the last few weeks because it was SEC media days and then other things. RJ was having to fill in for the drill, so he was here at 4 a.m. and wasn't staying for our show. So it's been a little chaotic, but now we're back to it, RJ.
We're back now. We are back. So the ladies know the rules, and by the ladies, I mean Lauren, Donna, and Taylor.
The three of us have been here.
And RJ Saunders knows the rules, too, but not Mia. So for this exercise, Mia, I will say a quote. You will guess who said it.
Okay.
And if you guys get it right, we will then play the clip. After that, come back to me. I will make it Jag-centric to ask you guys a question. Are we ready to begin?
Let's do it.
Yes. Go.
All right. During his show yesterday, this individual said, this is an interesting story. You can do everything right in the NFL. The Colts have done everything right. You build a pass rush, a great O-line, a great GM, an excellent coach, but they can't get the quarterback right. And when Andrew Luck retired, they have been holding water at the number one most important position. Ladies, who said it?
Not going to lie, when you first started saying it, I thought it was Nick Foles. But now I'm going to say Stephen A. Smith?
No.
It was on his show.
On his show. Dan Patrick?
No.
Jeff Prosser?
It won't be anybody from 1010. Okay.
Man. I just know he's a big quarterbacks guy.
What? I will give you a hint. Mm-hmm. This host works for Fox Sports.
Colin Cowherd.
Ding, 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 ding.
There we go.
I have yet to win one of these.
I know, I haven't either. Well,
you
I
don't win a prize.
Previously,
so
it was
excited.
The NBA, and I was having to Google, okay, who's on this team?
Well done, RJ. That was good.
So, ladies, here is Colin Cowherd from yesterday talking about Carson Wentz.
This is an interesting story. You can do everything right in the National Football League. Everything right. The Colts have done everything right. They built a pass rush, a great O-line, a great GM, an excellent coach, super roster, smart with their money, don't overpay anybody. Yeah, they can't get the quarterback right. And when Andrew Luck retired right before the season, everybody in the media said, he has a right to retire whenever he wants. I said it too. But this is what it is since then. They have been bailing water at the number one most important position.
So as Colin Cowherd says this, as you ladies have just heard, it made me think about the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know when you have a new team or when you have a team at all, a lot of things have to happen in order for you to be successful that year. A lot of things have to happen in order for you to make the playoffs. It seems like the doors are opening up for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This is a wobbly division. And I think I'm putting that lightly. Mm-hmm. Where do the Jacksonville Jaguars rank, in your opinion, as of right now, in the division? Have they now turned into the best team, maybe the second best team, or are they still kind of in the middle of the water, 3-4, still not expecting them to make the playoffs?
I would say second best team because they have to prove that they're the best team. I think Indy, because right now there's no quarterback right now. Houston, because we don't know who their quarterback is, if Deshaun's even going to be allowed to play. And Houston's a debacle. And Tennessee has everything still in place.
Tennessee's the front runner.
Right.
Tennessee's the front runner. There's no question there. To be quite frank, I think the quarterback position, like Colin Cowherd mentioned, has been a question mark in Indianapolis the last 2 years, and they have still found ways. Well, Phillip Rivers last year, but still a question mark. They have still found ways to make the playoffs because many believe, well, first of all, they were the only team in the AFC to rank in the top 10 in defense and offense last year. So that's number one. That number two is a large, it speaks volumes of the offensive line. So in my opinion, the Carson Wentz injury is important, but I would say this latest injury to Quentin Nelson and then Ryan Kelly also being out an extended period of time, that is the timetable that I'm really looking at. Yeah. How far of a hole does that, how deep of a hole does that create and put the Colts behind the eight ball? Mm-hmm. And that's where I question whether they are the second or third best team in this division. The Texans are in the bottom, is what it is. But, you know, to that point, we've learned it here in Jacksonville. Well, if you can get the quarterback right, everything else will follow. That's what we've seen across the National Football League. And not having the right quarterback here has been what continues to set this franchise back.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm on the same page as you because for me, the Carson Wentz injury didn't move the dial for me whatsoever. It didn't change what I thought because I already didn't have a lot of confidence that Carson Wentz was going to come out and lead this team to something
or play
amazing.
17 games.
Yeah, or make it through the whole entire season. To me, I was looking at other pieces, the top 10 ranked offense and defense, Jonathan Taylor, Quentin Nelson, T.Y. Hilton, and then a defense that really proved themselves, especially towards the end of the stretch. So for me, it wasn't the Carson Wentz thing. For me, it is what these offensive line injuries, which she's saying Eric Fisher's already looking really good. She's saying Quentin Nelson's probably towards the more of the 5 weeks over the 12 weeks. So for me, I think just because the Jaguars in my eyes have too many question marks of how they'll be this season, I think this could change drastically in a couple, two, three seasons. But this season, I think there's so many question marks that I still have that Tennessee, Indianapolis, Jaguars.
Titans 1, Jaguars 2, Colts 3, Texans 4. And See? There you have it.
Yeah, there you have it. All right, let's get into some more NFL next on Helmets and Heels, driven by Tire Outlet.
I think we can all understand, you know, Green Bay isn't, a huge vacation destination. People are coming here to play with me. To play with our team and knowing that they can win a championship here. And the fact that I haven't been used in those discussions was one I wanted to change moving forward.
You're wearing Helmets and Heels.
Driven by Tire Outlet. Brought to you by Renewal by Anderson and Underwood Jewelers.
On 1010XL.
I don't know, man. I heard Green Bay's great this time of year. Maybe not in, December, but it's the character that counts, right? We are going to dive headfirst into the Aaron Rodgers last dance debacle going on with the Green Bay Packers. But first, we have Lauren's Fresh Take.
Thank you, Mia. It is our first ever Lauren's Fresh Take, brought to you by Spencer's Jerk and Jerky, the freshest jerky ever crafted. You've never had beef jerky this fresh, or in Donna's case, she's never had beef jerky.
Never,
so she
ever
can't
in my
wait
life. So
until
great.
Spencer's Jerk and Jerky arrives yes. here at 1010 so you get to taste it. It is made to order from the trip to the butcher to the freshly crafted marinades. You can find them online at spencersjerkandjerky.com. You also saw, by the way, they are sponsoring Big Dez, Desmond Watson, a big offensive lineman at the University of Florida. Mm. And they Spencer sent me a Big Meat, that's his nickname, shirt to wear to SEC Media Days. So I did. I got to wear that to support Big Dez. And multiple people at SEC Media Days were looking
Big
at
Meat.
Me. Yes, looking at me like, why is this girl wearing a t-shirt that says Big Meat? But either way, now they know. All right, here is my fresh take. Most people are assuming that the Jaguars will beat the Texans since the Houstons are a mess, or in your words, Donna, a debacle. But if the Jaguars lose that game, that week one game in Houston, there is going to be panic all throughout the fan base. Trevor Lawrence already has a ton of pressure on him going into his rookie season, trying to completely turn this franchise around. But if the Jaguars lose to the Texans, I feel like Trevor Lawrence is going to have the weight of the world on his shoulders to then try and come home, win the home opener against Denver. That is Lauren's fresh take. Spencer's Jerk and Jerky, by the way, giving 10% off to all listeners with worldwide shipping. Just use the promo code HEELS at spencersjerkandjerky.com. Again, that's promo code HEELS for 10% off, spencersjerkandjerky.com.
Heels. Mm. I like it.
Speaking of pressure.
Yes.
Not too much pressure on the Green Bay Packers to win this year, right? Heck right? No.
Nothing at all.
Not like we're not here and this is the end. We're, they got to pay Devontae and they're not going to, so this is his. Hello. They're posting Instagram photos of the last dance. Yeah. Like, I mean, this was one of the greatest dramas, and there's plenty of people that are saying Aaron Rodgers created this spectacle. And it really resulted in nothing aside from taking 1 year off of his contract and most likely voiding the other year that is remaining, so that this is his last season in Green Bay. So my question, whoever wants to take this first, is...
Taylor,
as our resident NFC North fan over here, do you think the Green Bay Packers, despite all of the offseason drama and everything else, do you think they win the division and make a run to the Super Bowl this year?
I don't know. It's hard because I've seen Aaron Rodgers do it over and over and over again. So to me, you want to say immediately yes, because Aaron Rodgers and Devontae are both back. But I and I mentioned this last week, I do not think that suddenly, and it showed already this last week and a half since all of these comments, since Aaron Rodgers said a lot of this stuff, and obviously with this press conference, he was angry, and he said a lot of things. He called out the organization in a lot of ways. I don't think they really care. I think they knew that this was going to come because they were like, look, let's just make him happy for one more season so we can figure out what we're doing and not have Blake Bortles as the next quarterback that we're about to start. But I think that that's not going away. I think there's going to be a lot of weird strife in the organization, a lot of weird, just not good mentality, and that plays on a team. As good as Aaron Rodgers is, he's also only hasn't even been to the Super Bowl in a decade and has one ring and keeps getting knocked out of the NFC Championship game. And this is with really, really good teams. This is with what you had last year. And granted, it was Tom Brady.
Made the show again.
Yeah.
Good, because the next question's for you about Tom Brady. Ooh. Continue, Taylor.
Stop, Brady.
For me, it's not looking at Green Bay. For me, it's looking at the rest of the division. And for the Bears, they are figuring things out, too. They don't even know who they say Andy Dalton. They don't know if it's going to be Andy starting game one. And from what I'm hearing in camp, it doesn't look like it's leaning towards Andy Dalton and to be starting. From what I'm hearing, Fields is progressing every single game and is looking a lot stronger and better and faster and quicker and has learned the playbook better from everything I'm hearing. So who knows? So that's a big question mark. And
the Vikings don't have a quarterback.
The Vikings with Kirk Cousins, it's just so much inconsistency that you never know. The Lions have Jared Goff, who I personally think is a downgrade. They also got rid of Marvin Jones, who was 75% of, or between Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay were like 75% of their touchdowns the last two seasons. So I think it's more of what can happen between, I'm going to say, the Bears and the Vikings. How fast is Fields going to come out and actually be able to perform, or if Dalton plays? And how if is this defense back to 2018, which I think it can be for the Bears. And then for the Vikings, which we hear this every single year in the NFC North, this is the Vikings year. This is the Vikings year. It's been repetitive over and over and over again. So maybe it is. Maybe they figured out some things. Maybe Kirk Cousins has taken a step up. But for me, it's more of that than it is for Aaron Rodgers, because we've seen Aaron Rodgers get beaten by the Vikings and the Bears in the last 5, 6, 7 years a few times between the two teams. So it can happen. Especially, I think, if he just doesn't care as much, and it's looking like it's kind of that.
Broader question, Donna. Do you think, as a quarterback, they should be in every meeting with the front office, that they should have influence? Because this is not the first time this offseason that topic has been broached. Russell Wilson also brought it to the table. And also, the reason Tom Brady left New England was largely because he felt that the Patriots weren't listening to his requests for more skill players. Obviously, in Tampa, he had a treasure trove of skill players and also had a little more influence in speaking with general manager Jason Light. So
I think that depends on the quarterback.
Okay.
I think it definitely depends on the quarterback and the status of that QB.
Is Aaron Rodgers worthy of that?
They have given Aaron Rodgers everything. He has had everything. He has been to
not
where?
Not first-round receivers.
It's ridiculous who he has had. He has been there. He has had records like 13-3. It's not his. It's not.
It's not the eight and eight that Tom Brady was, or whatever, or 9-7 that he was in his last season in New England.
Right, it's a coaching decision, which he should be. They didn't go for it. You know, instead of, you know, look, Tom Brady was in his way. Is that his fault? That's not his fault. You know, Tom Brady beat him, but look, he has been, you know, either beaten out or he's had weapons throughout. He's had Devontae Adams. He's had these weapons.
So you think he has no room to complain?
I don't think he has room to complain. I think it's ridiculous. If you want to compare rosters with his and compare Tom Brady's rosters of 20 years, it's absurd. He will be Hall of Famers, Hall of Famers, Hall of Famers, mm-hmm. and Brady will have Gronk.
And Julian Edelman.
Chris Hogan, who played college lacrosse.
No, that was just the one little question mark.
Yeah,
was the Julian
Edelman
question
will not
mark
be,
and
no,
Gronk.
Yeah, Gronk and Randy Moss, which, I mean, he's been on multiple teams. Yeah. But that was it. That's Gronk is his only Hall of Famer. That was it. That's all he's had. And Aaron Rodgers has been surrounded. And just like Peyton Manning was surrounded. That was it. But no, it's
don't
ridiculous.
You think the Packers should have talked to Aaron Rodgers before they drafted Jordan Love?
No.
See, I think that's where they went
wrong. That's ridiculous. No, that's absolutely ridiculous. Of course they're going to draft a QB.
Why, of course?
Because
Tom Brady's still playing
till
44, why can't Aaron Rodgers play till 44? Why would they draft a QB now?
You always draft a QB. Look at what
Indy. But not that high.
Look at what Indy is sitting with.
Yeah, fourth round.
Look at what Indy is sitting with. You have a whole lot of nothing because you went and got Carson Wentz, who is an injured walking duck.
But they drafted a QB in the fourth round.
Which is what... That's what they did in New England. They always drafted QBs almost every year. If you go back and you look at their draft class, it was almost every other year they drafted a quarterback. Every other year they drafted a quarterback.
The highest of those quarterbacks, though, being Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round. So yes. They did draft a quarterback high. But I mean,
and I assume they talked to Brady about that. That may be the difference.
That's where everything started.
Yes, that's where the drama
it
began.
We don't know if they mentioned it or not. But
right.
I think if you have a quarterback who's once been an MVP, you have the conversation. I'm not saying that you say, do you want us to draft a quarterback or not? Or do you want us to draft you a weapon? Because obviously we all know the quarterback's answer. But I think you talk to them about it. I think in the NFL, is it all about competition? Of course.
Mm-hmm.
But we are learning that quarterbacks are divas. They may not have always have been because they used to be super tough and physical. But now the game has shifted so much. The quarterback is turning into, not all of them, but some of them are divas, and so you want to massage the ego of that person because that person's the most important person in your entire franchise. Yeah.
And Rodgers is different because he doesn't even talk to his family. So he's a different kind of dude, man.
He looks like, let's just interject real quick. Right? He looks like Shailene Woodley's like weird uncle,
yes.
And then he's out in Hawaii
so
with Miles Teller. Right. Like, I don't know, man.
He doesn't even talk to his family. Yeah. This is, you know.
That's
personal,
not professional.
Right, but he was brought in... And Brett Favre, that whole situation is exactly the same as having Jordan Love brought in. So Brett Favre he wasn't even nice to him. It's the same exact situation.
Deja vu all over again.
Yeah. I'm just saying, as much as I think, yes, you have to always worry about your organization first. I still think with the most important person, you want to make sure that person's happy. And I'm not saying you give them... the personnel decision making. I'm not saying that, but I do think you have the conversations. We are thinking about drafting this player. I want you to know up front so that you don't get a notification on your phone that says the Packers have done this and you're completely blindsided.
Yeah, I think there should be communication, but I also think that Aaron Rodgers is being very, very diva-ish about this.
Totally
and
agree.
I think that it's like, wow, because I'm like so sorry that your organization can draft so well that they find the talent they are in the second to fourth round, because not everybody can do that. Like most people are counting on their first round picks because the organization cannot draft past that well. And so for you, you've had these coaches, you've had this organization higher up who cares enough and who has gotten these players steals in the second, third, fourth round. And that 1 year.
And you're still complaining.
Yeah, like you're getting a little older. So let's get a quarterback in a late round. I mean, late in the first round to just in case, and it's like a huge deal. So I think on both ends, like, there definitely needs to be communication, because you can't have a quarterback that is an MVP style quarterback and one that is potentially trying to lead your team to a Super Bowl in one of his last few years in the organization not have like any just like comment or say whatsoever, but you're also the head coach or the GM or whatever it may be, and you have to also have a fine line there.
Yeah, real quick before we break, just to bring it back to the Jaguars, we did talk to Joe Schobert over the weekend, who, number one, did you know he's a massive Milwaukee Bucks fan? I mean,
I did when you asked the question.
Yeah, most we've ever heard this guy open up. Granted, it was the first time we've talked to him in person, but we brought up to him about Giannis Antetokounmpo and the fact that he did stay with Milwaukee. And Joe mentioned that in the NBA, those superstars, it is so easy to leave and find another team and command a max contract. And the NFL is so different. And then as he said it, he went, although it is kind of changing with quarterbacks.
It is. Yeah. It absolutely is.
Wisconsin, Milwaukee Bucks, Green Bay Packers. I know obviously Joe Schobert's a Jaguars fan because he plays here, but at the same time.
Well, I took that. Does that mean he wants to stay here because Trevor's here? That's how I just took what you just said.
Interesting. See, I took it as he was alluding to Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, these guys that have no qualms spending 10 plus years with a city and giving their all and then saying, meh, bye. We saw it with Brady. We could see it again. Yep. We have to take one last break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of Olympics. Lauren has another rant for us. It's not a fresh take. It's a rant. You're going to want to stick around. Helmets and Heels continues after this. Time out.
7 years and still going strong.
Helmets and Heels, driven by Tire Outlet.
Brought to you by Underwood Jewelers.
And Renewal by Anderson.
On 1010XL.
Sad I didn't choose Boys of 69.
Summer. Summer of 69. Summer of 69.
I know what it is. I'm just trying to
thought
keep
you
that
might,
joke running.
But this is how much of a dork I am. By the way, do all y'all know this song?
Yes.
Of course.
December 62. Yes. Yeah. So this is how much of a dork I am, though. Not only did I pick a song with a number in the title, but also the band has a number in their name.
That's
this
cute.
Is the Four Tops.
Four Seasons.
Four Tops.
No, this is the Four Seasons. I thought it was Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons.
Yeah. It is the Four Seasons for
five.
Okay,
there you go. Four something.
They're from New Jersey. Come on. All right, there we go. Now you've hit me a bingo if you got Iowa, Ithaca,
well
New Jersey.
That was a good move.
We went from Drake to the Four Seasons. I had the Four Tops in my head for some unknown reason.
I do want a quick note before we dive into Olympic discussion. This just coming out of Sam Farmer, who covers the NFL for the LA Times.
Yes.
Spent the first half of the day with Philip Rivers, who assures me that while he's focused on coaching high school football now, he isn't closing the door on coming back for a stint late in the season if there's an NFL God. Team that needs him.
Well, Colts,
he may
want to come
use
first
him now.
But I don't care. I'd never want to see Philip Rivers again.
Right?
I don't care.
I'm good. I'm good with that one.
Is he meaning like if his high school football team sucks, he'll say never?
Yep.
Yeah, so we know it is Tom Brady's birthday, by the way. Do you think that he could surpass George Blanda's as the oldest player to ever play?
Oh, yeah, easily.
And that was 48 years old and 109 days?
There's no way. So, he's quitting in the next two seasons.
So
he's going to play this
Brady.
Season. And then I think after
what
next
is he, 44?
Season, he's 44. 44. I think he'll play it this year. I think he might play next year, but that's the end. That's
so Brady would have to play to week 10 in the 2025 season.
There's no way.
If they have a good
There's
offensive
no
line
way.
In front of him, you never know. Real quick, Donna and I said off the air, if you've seen the side-by-side of it's Tom Brady's 44th birthday today, it's Zach Wilson's 22nd birthday, and ESPN was like, oh, they look the same age, and Donna was like, no, Zach Wilson looks like he's 15.
Yeah.
Tom Brady looks like he's about, 34.
Yeah.
But Zach Wilson looks
they
like he's
15.
They
said he was born 8 months before Brady was drafted. That's, like, insane.
When we sit here and ask, how old were you when we started the show?
Yeah.
You know. That's cute.
Hit us with your Olympic soccer All rant, right. Lauren, because I know I have feelings as well.
Okay, it'll be nice and quick. The U.S. women's national team needs a changing of the guard. The frontline players are not fast enough, and I understand that there are two legends on this team in Carly Lloyd and Megan Rapinoe, but their days are done. They're step too slow, and we need to stop catering to the fact that they are legends of the sport, and we need to move on, and we need to get faster, and we need to get faster now, and we need to get more youthful, and we need to get more youthful now because I'm tired of... Well, I was just plain tired yesterday because I woke up at 3:30 in the morning, all excited, coming off of a huge high with tears in my eyes Friday morning as we successfully beat the Netherlands in PKs. And Alyssa Nayer was absolutely amazing. And then 20 minutes into this game, she gets hurt. And I don't blame the loss on her. I blame the loss on the offense. And I have said this a few times now. Alex Morgan is one of my least favorite players to ever play for this team. She is beautiful. Don't get me wrong. I think she's absolutely gorgeous. But she's in the right place at the right time sometimes. And yes, that can work to your advantage. But for the rest of the time, she has terrible first touch. And she really needs to step up her game. Because to be the face of this team now moving forward, you got to be better than that. You got to learn to really finish. You got to learn to be able to make some better tackles, even though you're an offensive player. This team never found their rhythm. And I don't understand why not. But all I can think of is that it's because every time they tried to push the ball forward, we ended up having terrible touches on the ball offensively. And again, Megan Rapinoe has been fantastic for the team. Her corners, she took a lot of the corners if she was in.
Of which there were 11 corners.
Right, 11 corners Monday morning. Some of her corners were terrible. Look, previously she has scored goals off of corners. That is unbelievable. Well, now, unfortunately, she no longer has the right ball placement. And so the corners were not good. And overall, this team needs to get faster, get younger, and that's my rant.
And nice. There's many things to take away from that. Number one, Alex Morgan, she of 111 international goals, which I'm right with you. I have never been an Alex Morgan fan, and I know that upsets a lot of my family and friends that are very large Alex Morgan fans.
Sure.
I mean, to be quite frank, you know, back in 2011, 2015, I used to say she looked like a horse. Oh, sorry about that, Alex.
Mine has nothing to do with her
look. I also called Eli Manning a deer in the headlights for a while there. I've had some other names for other
people. You're correct with that one.
Yeah. Anyways, Alex Morgan is 32 years old. So she may be a part of the 2023 World Cup team.
She
will be a part of the 2024 Olympic team.
Like more babies in between.
Right. She will be there for those two, and that is going to happen. But she's 32. I mean, she is not the one you're building this team around right now. My disappointment comes from, and I understand that there were conditioning issues. There was, I don't really know. What happened to Mallory Pugh? Mallory Pugh was supposed to be the next Alex Morgan. I mean, she's only 22 years old right now. I understand the Olympic team only allows 18 players. They allowed 5 more because of COVID protocols. But you cut her, the youngest player on the 2019 World Cup team. And who else do you have? I mean, Lynn Williams?
Lynn Williams didn't get enough playing time, in my opinion, because when she was in, she had an assist and she had a goal.
And Lynn Williams is 28 years old. So where is this youth? This is a program with the United States soccer program that has prided itself since 1991 on its Olympic development programs and the various feeders at various levels from U23 all the way down to U15, of which I was privileged to play with some of the girls that played on that team. Where are they now? They're in the NWSL needing sponsorships just to get by. And I don't know what happens in the pool in terms, and not the pool physically, people. I mean, the Olympic pool of players that they can possibly pull from for these national team games. I don't know what's happening at those practices. If Carly Lloyd's outperforming them, I can tell you she has more heart than anyone on the face of the earth.
But heart's not getting it done.
The heart's not going to get it done.
I need faster.
Right. And part of it, too, is also that we have to accept that the rest of the country is going to, or excuse me, the rest of the world is catching up with the United States. We said that in 2019.
Yep.
But there was magic in 2019 and there was juice. And part of me wants to blame it on the fact that they are playing in empty stadiums in Japan right now. But part of me agrees with you, Lauren, that it also stems from the average age of the front line for the United States is 35 years old.
Yeah, it's too old.
Lauren, mention a lot of times for especially maybe just like gymnastics when we were talking about Simone Biles. But because of the extra year of training for some of these women, also, do you think that affected it at all for soccer?
For soccer, I don't, just because the World Cup was in 2019, mm-hmm. and that really is a bigger deal than the Olympics are. Yeah, okay. Truth be told, so yes. They should be in really like peak conditioning shape. They should be,
they looked amazing in the send off game. And granted, it was Mexico, I watched the send off game, and I'm like, we're vibing, we're about to go for gold. And then I don't know what happened when they got off the plane.
Yeah, and we had some injuries. You know, Julie Ertz was injured up until the tournament, but then she was able to play it. And I think I tweeted, like, she's a badass. Defensively, mm-hmm. she's a badass. But offensively, there's no one who looked around the rest of the team and said, this is when we win, or this is how we win. Give the ball to me. I'm going to get a goal for you. It was just a lot of, oh, let's crowd the box and hope that we get a header in. Let's crowd the box and hope a ball goes off someone's foot, you know, and we get maybe an own goal like they did against the Netherlands. Or not the Netherlands, the game before that. But it's just at some point in time, you have to have that alpha, you know, and mm-hmm. that person who's ready to take over the game and is fast enough to be able to do so. And that was a big frustration of mine. As you can tell, I was awake starting at 3:30 in the morning. And now this team doesn't even get to try for gold or silver. They're going to settle for maybe bronze. I'm not watching the game. I refuse.
I woke up at 4:10 for it. I mean, I waited 10 minutes and then about 3 minutes later, Alyssa Nair got hurt. So I was like,
Yeah, that was terrible.
Yeah, that was terrible. One thing I will say too, and this is the last thing I will say, because I know we're running low on time. The culture of United States women's soccer over the last 10 years has been, we have our Abby Wambach, we have our Megan Rapinoe, we have our Carly Lloyd. No one is going to supplant them. Again, no one's going to have more heart than them. I'm never going to question that. But the fact that Kelly O'Hara, who was born and raised here in Jacksonville, fun facts, then moved to Georgia, Crystal Dunn, were some of the leading scorers in the NWSL in college soccer. And then they had to move to defense just so they could make the United States national team. Listen, you got to adapt. You want to make the team. Sometimes you got to change your position. I get that. But the fact that there was never really, okay, well, let's try them up top. It was, okay, well, you want to make the team? Like, I remember Crystal Dunn was really upset when she didn't make the 2015 team and she made the Olympic team as a fullback and she had to completely change her game. And so maybe the time has come for, you know, a little bit more open competition. Julie Ertz is going to be the MVP of the next 5 years of this program because they don't have any other holding midfielder because Lindsey Horan and Rose Lavelle should be playing on the outside, but that's a story for another time. But we will see them again in 2023, although it will certainly, hopefully, look like a different roster.
It better.
I'm sorry this upset you because
all
you
I got out of this
yourself.
Is they better be faster.
Well, you should. I said I tweeted it out like on Friday with the PKs. Lauren didn't leave her house to go to Jags practice.
No,
like, she waited till
late.
The PKs were done. I, you know, so I'm at the gym. I'm watching it. Went back to my apartment to shower. Had the TV on. Got it on my phone. Listened to it on the drive to the Jags. And then as I'm standing there on the sideline, I was watching it. So I said to any of the fans, I'm like, I hope you're filming me because this is the real show. My passionate like screaming and yelling every time a save or a kick was made. So
Lauren loves herself some soccer. That's you're not gonna watch.
No,
it?
I'm not watching.
Man.
No, I'm done.
That's sad.
Well, it's
they
at
frustrated
four.
Me
if
to
it,
that point.
If it was at 7, it's different. But
yeah,
I'm not
watching at 4 a.m. I'm not waking up again even if I'm not
gold.
Disappointed, it's for bronze. Look, in other Olympic sports, bronze, Simone Biles this morning, bronze on the beam, atta girl, way to go. That's fantastic. And by the way, we just found out today her aunt passed away 2 days before the Olympics. So she has been dealing with a lot, as we know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the U.S. women's national team, I'm sorry, I'm not watching. You've lost me for now. Mm-hmm. You can get me back if you get what, Taylor?
Speed.
Gold.
Oh, and fast.
You sound like
fast.
You sound like Urban Meyer
faster.
Out here.
Correct.
And get gold.
Soon she's gonna be calling it the 904 and she's gonna be taking deep dives because speed.
You got that right.
Well, we wanna make sure to thank Lara Overton. She came on with us, the team reporter for Indy, because they got a mess going on right now with the Colts. So thank her for joining us tonight. Make sure to stay tuned because Into the Night with Rick Ballew is coming up next. We want to send a special thank you to our newest sponsor.
Spencer's Jerk and Jerky.
Yes, because they're going to be sending us some jerky that I'm going to try for the first time.
That's right. 10% off with the code HEELS.
And we want to thank Tyrella and Renewal by Anderson for always coming on board with us. So for Mia O'Brien, yeah.
Oh, beer, no. Beer, 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 beer.
For RJ Saunders, for Taylor Dahl, for Lauren Brooks, I am Donna Murphy. You guys have a wonderful Tuesday night.